Welcome to Building Great Leaders with Dr. Les Olala.
And you have to make a commitment to prepare. Put yourself under a discipline where you make the tough choices to say no to your flesh and yes to that which is right.
On today's program, Dr. Olala focuses our attention on what the scripture says about a marathon mindset. This message was recorded during a chapel service in 2012. Building Great Leaders provides instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Our speaker, Dr. Les Olala, is the founder and director of Building Great Leaders and has been serving the Lord in full-time ministry for 50 years as a pastor, Bible college president, and evangelist. And now, Marathon Mindset.
I remember when I was in my first year in college, I was a little bit older, and I remember Dr. Bob Jones Jr. got up and said, "Don't let classes get in the way of your education here." And I thought, and I really followed that advice very carefully. But what he was saying, that your education goes beyond the classroom. The totality of your interaction with people and your growth and your own personality and your own accountability. I am going to speak this morning on the marathon mindset. Seven attributes. I found this several years ago in Stewardship Strategies magazine and Dr. John Maxwell. And I thought it was such a well-done article. And it's really going into the background of the marathon, the history of the marathon run. But I wanted to take the parallels that he has and the seven things that he had. I just had my secretary put them up on the PowerPoint. So you have each of these in mind as you begin your marathon of life. I'll start off by reading the introduction he had in this magazine. In the 4th century BC, Grecian forces engaged the vaunted Persian army in the Battle of Marathon. Outnumbered 4-1, the Greeks launched a surprise attack which must have seemed suicidal. But by the end of the fierce struggle, over 6,000 Persians lay dead on the plains of Marathon, and fewer than 200 Greeks had been killed. The Grecian army had prevailed and secured their homeland in a time of tumult and uncertain. The surviving Persians fled to their ships. The man named Pheidippides was singled out by his commanding officer to take the news of battle back to Athens. But the determination exceeded only by his zeal. Pheidippides instantly followed the order and began to run towards the capital city, a distance of 26.3 miles. No one knows precisely how long it took Pheidippides to cover the miles, but villagers along the route reported that he never slowed down, never wavered. He ran like the wind, wrote one poet. As a soldier, Pheidippides had fought for hours that day in the battle. Even before his first step, he was already exhausted, yet he pushed himself beyond all normal limits of endurance. Urging his body on, Pheidippides ran valiantly. When at last he entered Athens, he shouted in a loud voice, "Nene kamen," which means "we were victorious." After uttering this one word, so full of joy and promise, Pheidippides collapsed and died. Today, the place where Pheidippides died nearly 2,500 years ago is a memorial mound, a tribute to a fallen soldier and the armies he represented. For generations, the Greeks celebrated his feat and honored his memory. The marathon race, retracing Pheidippides' original course, was added to the Olympic Games in recognition of this amazing achievement. But some historians suggested that it could have ended much better. If only he had done just a few things differently, according to many accounts, Pheidippides never slowed down to take a drink or nibble a bite of food. He apparently never paced himself through the grueling uphill stretches of his legendary run. Although he was the first marathoner, he apparently ran his last race more like a sprinter. There are profound lessons in life and in death of Pheidippides. Many leaders when given the opportunity to take on a marathon challenge, has run too hard, too fast, with too little nourishment along the journey. Consequences can be severe. Some fall by the wayside. Others simply give up. And few taste victory only to die from the effort. Not necessarily a physical death, but a professional death, to be sure. And the point that he is making here, while we are going into this marathon run, there needs to be some balance involved, intending so you do not crash or you do not end up dying in the very thing that you were trying to accomplish. And what he does in this article, he points a difference between finishing or failing. And I thought in all of the ideas that I had to bring as my first challenge for this year, I thought these 7 points might be good for us to keep in mind as we go along. Number one, he said there has to be a vision for the whole race. When you begin your run, you have to see the whole race. Now, Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul uses a lot of these analogies from these early athletic games. 1 Corinthians 9:24, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize, so run that you may obtain. Every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to attain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. Therefore, so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should become a castaway." So Paul is making this analogy of the run. Hebrews chapter 12 speaks of the race that we are about to run. And what happens here is we need to see a vision for the entire race and that motivation that would be ahead of us. I like what Paul says in Philippians, "This one thing I do." Too many times it's the 7 things we dabble at. But Paul said, "This one thing I do, forgetting that which is behind, I press forth to the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." So when you see your beginning of this school year, you've got to see where it is going. You have to see the end product. You have to see the end result. I'm familiar with someone who went through officer training in the academy. There were sign-out stations. And it said at any point you can sign out and go back to your regular MO. There will be nothing on your MAR. There will be nothing on your record. And you will go back to your regular MO. And he said there was not one day he didn't think of going to that sign-out station and signing out, because the intensity of the training got so, so hard. But he said where there was every pain station, there was a vision station. How badly do you want these bars? How badly do you want this lieutenant position? How badly do you want this? And he said he would keep that vision before you. And he said the pain stations would also be supported by the vision of where you eventually want to end up. And rather than going and sign out, "I want out of this, I want to go back to more of a normal function. I just want to go back to where it's a little easier." You forget to see where you want to go. Where do you want to go? You have no idea. Some of you will end up being the first person to name the name of Jesus Christ to someone who has never heard that name. And right now you have a vision by the grace of God. That's where you want to end up, to go where the gospel has never been given. Well, that is a daily race. And every day you have to see, where are you going? And secondly, there has to be a commitment to preparation. And so you see, good intentions are not enough. You say, "Well, I'd kind of like to," but that's not enough. You have to make your decision every single day. I remember some years back, I was approached by the coach of Iron Mountain High School football team. And they were getting ready to go down state to play for the state championship. for Michigan Class C. And he asked if I would come and speak to the team in the locker room. So they came in. It was a rainy, foggy evening. They came in with their uniforms all caked in mud from the practice. And the coach says, I've got somebody here to talk to us. Just take a seat in the locker room. So these guys stayed in their uniforms with the mud on the uniforms. He introduced me to speak. And I spoke on what does it take to win a championship? What does it take? And I said, you can't win a championship by dreaming about banners. Well, what about a banner and a trophy in the cabinet? And I said, if your vision is on a banner and you're the quarterback and you're under center and you're thinking banners and trophies, you're going to look like you play for the Lions. And I've been a Lions, depressed Lions fan for years, all the years I lived in Detroit, many years of bitterness and hardship that I have gone through. So that just kind of spurts. Of course, I've been a Packer fan all my life, but when I live in an area, I become a fan of whatever team's in that area. And unfortunately, I live near Detroit. And I said, you can't be thinking, if you're a wide receiver, and you can't be thinking, what you have to be thinking is that play. If you're under center, you think of that play. If you're on defense and you're a defensive back, you're a safety, you're thinking of that play. And I said, championships are won one play at a time. In soccer, it's one possession at a time. You win a 50-50. Whatever that is, it's one play at a time. And next thing you know, the next play. And the most important thing is that play. And next thing you know, there's a banner and a trophy. And then I turn to, how do you become a champion in life? And it's one choice at a time. And I said, you cannot be thinking apart from these things. You have to choose rightly every single time. And you become a champion one choice at a time. As you go through your college career, there are going to be many choices ahead of you. The semester will come to an end. You will choose, do I continue or do I quit? You come to a choice where you have a project due. Do I do that or go to the gym? You have a test the next day. Do you pray for the rapture or do you study? And then Iron Mountain went downstate against a very, very tough team and came back with the Class C state championship. And that team came back into Iron Mountain with lights buzzing, cars, buses. And the coach sent word. He said, tell Les we won the state championship one play at a time. You know, when you look back at your college career and you will ask, where will I be 10 years from now? You will be where you will be 10 years from now, one choice at a time. And you have to make a commitment to prepare. Put yourself under a discipline where you make the tough choices to say no to your flesh and yes to that which is right. There has to be commitment to preparation. Then there has to be willingness to endure pain or discomfort. I think when you look at all of the instruction from the life of the Apostle Paul, and you see the striving for the mastery, you know, that's quite a statement. There is he who strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. You have to say, where am I going? What do I want? How will I prepare? What choice will I make? What price will I pay? What sacrifice will be made? The ancient runners, where Paul used the analogy, I will buffet my body. Of course, for years, I thought that word was buffet. And so, as you can tell the result accordingly, then somebody showed me the Greek on that. Number four, a daily regimen before and after the race. How important is consistency as you go on in your life? What is your daily regimen? Meeting in the morning and getting some type of a system that is never designed to put you on a guilt trip. Never let your spiritual goals become the source of your guilt. Otherwise, you think, well, I'm going to read the three chapters a day. You read five of the 7 days and you're all on a guilt trip about the 3 days you didn't read. That is not the idea. Enjoy the Lord. Enjoy Him. Think on Him. Meditate on Him. Your system is only a guide. It's never a source of your guilt. But sometimes you put yourself under these false guilt things. But you do need to develop a daily regimen in your life, a discipline that is so crucial that you are able to make right choices as you go along the way. And some of you know that daily regimen means sleep. It means proper diet. I think if you were to talk to those who have run the marathon, what was your daily routine leading up to that 26.3-mile run? Your spiritual disciplines, your hours of prayer, study, the layouts that you have in life, and you say, okay, what really should be the way I live my day? How should I structure my day to accomplish this particular end? And then a focus on the goal, finishing the race. Christ said the joy that was set before Him endured the cross. The joy, the bride that was coming, the price that was being paid, focusing on that goal. Many, many years ago, I think it was in the late 60s or mid 60s, I read a book by Maxwell Maltz called Psycho-Cybernetics. And the premise of this book was that the mind is a goal-striving mechanism. And at that time, they had the nose cone of torpedoes. There was electronics in the nose cone of a torpedo when it was fired from a submarine. It had a goal-striving mechanism in it, and it operated on negative feedback. In other words, when the torpedo was shot out, it was going off, negative feedback would correct it to get it right on track to hit a ship in the water as it was going. And Maxwell Maltz was pointing out that the mind is a goal-striving mechanism and operates on negative feedback. In other words, you start a direction and you hit a wall. And it's always in a corrective mood. He said, but what happens is that most people, 90% of people quit, or 85% quit after the first negative feedback. In other words, they're heading towards a goal, but something goes awry and they quit. Another 10% quit after the second negative feedback. And he said 5% at that time really would go on to accomplish the goal that they had set. And he said, interestingly, that 5% of the population of the world controls 90% of the wealth of the world. And he said, people quit because their goal seems to be hindered by an issue, by a problem. And you cannot be turned aside by that. And when we look at the goals or the achievements, Paul says in Philippians 3:10, he sets his purpose statement after he puts all of his bloodline, all of his pedigree, he listed all. He said, I have put that in a manure pile that I may know Him, that Christ might be gained, that I might know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His suffering. Why should we know Him? Because in all of His attributes, we will find ourselves a rescue point when we hit the wall, and then a determination never to give up. You just don't stop. Sadly, we see Paul's co-worker said, Demas hath forsaken me. having loved this present world. He plowed with Paul. He went through all kinds of areas. It didn't say Demas forsook me because he ran off with the organist in Philippi. Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. And sometimes when you get in a Christian education training, you're sitting in a Christian university and you're looking at the world, I still battle this. I look at what the world, I look at what people who are Christians, they're saved too, but their whole goal seems to be completely different. Their whole goal doesn't seem to be knowing him. Their whole goal doesn't seem to, but yet they're very accepted. And many times my mind has to go back to Psalm 73, where Asaph said, my feet almost slipped because I became envious of the wicked. He said they had fatness in their eyes. They had no sorrow in death. And he said, I have made myself righteous in vain. He said, until I went into the sanctuary of God and I considered their end, that they were on slippery places headed for hell. And we have to keep in mind, when you have committed to give yourself to Christ, to give yourself to going with the gospel, you're going to go out basically as a beggar through life, asking. And if you're like I am, I hate to ask for anything. I have a hard time going to God for things that I can think I can work out by myself. I know the truth. I know theologically how it works. But sometimes emotionally. Many of you who follow Olympics remember the story of Wanderlei de Lima. In the 2004 Olympics were held in Athens, birthplace of the Olympic Games. It was a spectacular setting for one of the most memorable competitions in many years. In the final event, the marathon, Wanderlei de Lima of Brazil was leading the race with 3 miles to go. It was the strongest race of his career. Spectators were cheering him on with every stride. Suddenly, a crazy man burst onto the track and forcefully grabbed de Lima, pulling him into the crowd. Security personnel wrestled the man away, and a shaken de Lima returned to the race lane, but by then he had lost his lead to Italy Stefano Baldini. While still regaining his composure, de Lima was passed by another runner, but he pressed on toward the goal. Baldini eventually captured the gold medal. De Lima finished third, winning the bronze. Professionally, it was his greatest disappointment, but personally, it was an amazing achievement. Rarely in Olympic history has a third-place finisher been more highly lauded. But everyone knew that Wanderlei de Lima was a winner because he had not given up. And so it is with a leader who has a marathon mindset. Difficulties will come. Obstacles will block your path. Pitfalls lurk on all sides. Surprise attacks will threaten to put you out of the race. But as a leader, you must never give up and never give in. And I used this illustration at a men's conference a couple years ago. And a man came up afterwards. He said, put Wanderlei de Lima in your computer. He said, pull that up. He said, he was given the highest ever award by the IOC. The International Olympic Committee granted Wanderlei de Lima an award higher than gold because he didn't quit when he got blindsided. And student, if there's anything that you need to keep in mind, you keep your eyes on him, you keep your focus on him, you keep your focus on the goal of conformity to him, and no matter what comes along, because most of you have not experienced something that tears you up so badly that you cannot see through tears. But some of you will. And you are going to have to determine, will I keep on going? Or will I throw in the towel and say, I've had enough? Most of you are familiar with Winston Churchill's commencement address at an institution. It was 9 words. After his introduction, he got up and said, never, 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 never give up. And he sat down. The applause was 15 minutes. And his address was probably 30 seconds. What was he saying? When you go on in life, don't throw in the towel. Don't give up. And then last of all, there will be realization that the run is worth the effort. This is what Paul kept before the hearts and minds of believers. There is a reward. Christ said, when I come, I will bring my rewards with me. And we see they were working for corruptible, but we for incorruptible crowns, according to 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. In Philippians 2, Paul says, I want to know that I have not run in vain. I did not run an empty life. I did not live a life, and when it's all said and done, it's gone. There's nothing left because my focus was wrongly directed. My mindset was wrongly directed. I remember some years back, I was on a plane sitting reading my Bible, and a stewardess saw the Bible. She said, I want to talk to you later when I'm done serving. And she said, we were still on the ground in Pittsburgh, and said, the colonel is getting on the plane. I said, what colonel is that? I said, Colonel Sanders, Harlan Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I thought, well, I'm sure he's going to come and sit by me. They didn't have a first and second class section. It was just one long tube. Colonel Sanders comes on the plane. He sits right across the aisle. He was in B and I was in C. He had two bodyguards with him. And I said, I heard that you became a Christian recently. Is that true? He said, yes. He said, I was 82 years old when I accepted Christ. He said, I'm 86 now. And he said, but I wasted my life. And he said that many times I wasted my life. When you come to the end, you'll realize it was worth saying no to flesh and yes to spirit. And I hope we never lose sight of that.
Thank you for joining us for Building Great Leaders today. Dr. Les Olala speaking on a marathon mindset. This program is a ministry of Building Great Leaders, providing instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders, and is produced by Harvest Ministries on Guam. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Join us again for more teaching from the Word of God next time on Building Great Leaders.